first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, patriots and jackbooted thugs alike. It is that time again. It's the hour of power. It is the TNT radio show on the My View Matters radio network. We thank you again for joining us. It is Tuesday, September the 30th. It is the last day of the month. As always, if you want to call in, the call-in numbers for all shows on this network are 858-683-1326, 858-683-1326. Well, starting right out, going straight to the Freedom Calendar here. Don't have a lot of stuff on the Freedom Calendar. We'll turn the page here because we are still in this week. Looks like we had this week, believe it or not, in 1982, hard to believe, only 32 years ago, that Congress declared the Bible to be the Word of God. I think that's interesting. That's something we probably wouldn't see Congress doing today. And also this week in history, we got the Model T Ford, Tin Lizzy, built this week in 1908. So like I said, not a lot on the Freedom Calendar. We'll just hang that back up there. We've got a lot of news that we want to talk about tonight. Maybe some of y'all have heard about the Ebola case right here in the United States in Dallas, Texas. We try to warn people about the dangers of Ebola. No one seems to give a damn that we have the U.S. government ordering hundreds of thousands of Ebola outfits as far as for hazmat purposes. We're supposed to just pretend like that's no big deal. That's nothing to see here, I guess. And then we also got the fact that there's a lot of stuff going on, and I try to talk to people about it. I try to tell them it's out there, and they just ignore it. And what am I talking about? Not just rambling onward. I'm talking about stuff like when we found out that ISIS, or whatever they want to call themselves, we found out that they are using vehicles that are Toyota trucks made in the United States. And these are vehicles that were modified for U.S. Special Forces. You mean the junk food media didn't tell you about that? Exactly. That's something they don't want you to know about. We don't really get into the boogeyman here because we know there's always a new boogeyman. It was called Al-Qaeda. Now it's called ISIS. And we'll just go look at this piece for a minute. If we haven't touched on it, I've got a lot of loose ends to tie up this week. And again, like I said, this is a piece goes back about a week and a half ago. I thought it was strange that the ISIS people were using these Toyota trucks that were modified for U.S. Special Forces, made in Texas. Seems a little odd to me, I guess. New iconic white Toyota trucks that you'll see ISIS driving around probably look a lot familiar to you because they're the ones made in the United States. Also the ones outfitted by Special Forces of the United States military. And it's not something you can just run out to a dealership in Iraq and make off with 30 new vehicles. They aren't even sold in Iraq. And certainly not with these modifications. And certainly not with an entire fleet. Isn't it strange? ISIS just happens to be pictured along with a convoy of Toyota trucks that were modified the exact same way the Special Forces has them outfitted before shipping them from the factory in Texas. So when you combine that with the discovery that, one, ISIS has U.S. military small arms, don't believe that. You can do some research on U.S. government photos and weapons. Number two, ISIS has U.S. military Humvees. Number three, ISIS has U.S. military artillery. And number four, they have U.S. citizens running their social media campaigns. And don't forget that good old Juan McCain, Senator John McCain of Arizona, met with the destabilization campaign terrorists in Syria. What conclusions would a reasonable human being come from? If you heard all those things, that ISIS was using military small arms from the U.S., U.S. military Humvees, U.S. military artillery, U.S. citizens running their online social media campaigns, and also John McCain meeting with their campaign terrorists. So that's That's just something I wanted to hit on. We're going to hit on a bunch of different points tonight. I wanted to get that one out there first because people don't seem to care. Not a big deal. Everybody's scared of the boogeyman. If it was Al-Qaeda, they'd be scared of the Al-Qaeda. If it was ISIS, they'd be scared of ISIS. Got some local news. Maybe if Ed Springsteen's listening out there, he might want to call in and talk to us. That's totally at his discretion if he's available out there. If not, we understand. But got some local news we want to cover. Seems that today we had a little school shooting in Louisville, Kentucky. Maybe some of y'all haven't heard about this school shooting in Louisville, Kentucky, but it made CNN's front page. It made Fox News. I'm guessing it made the nation, and it must have been a slow news day, I'm thinking. But apparently, allegedly, whatever the proper terms I'm supposed to use, there was a school shooting just a few miles from me. In fact, I was going through the neighborhoods today, and here comes 10, 12, 15, 16 different police cars. And I'm thinking, well, that's strange in the middle of the afternoon on a Tuesday afternoon. And then we hear that a high school student was injured and one person was being sought after a shooting in a high school in southern Louisville. Southeast Louisville, to be exact, Fern Creek High School. And they said this student had non-life-threatening injuries, and they had been reunited with their parents over at University Hospital. That's what Police Officer Phil Russell said. And they said at the time that they didn't know if this shooter and the injured student knew each other. Well, lo and behold, it came out later, they did apprehend the suspect, and he was a student at the school. Now, they wouldn't show us pictures of him being apprehended, and he's underage, they say. He's 15 or 16 years old, so I guess that could be a legality. Wave 3 News did have their chopper going over top of the area, and it was very close to us here at the underground bunker. And we looked and looked. We couldn't really see the suspect. They kept telling us at the time they were looking for a male suspect, about 6'5", wearing a gray hoodie. Oh, there's the dreaded hoodie again. Black pants, and about 15 to 16 years old. Well, I would say that them not telling us the suspect's race does actually indeed tell us what the race is. Now, we didn't get any concrete facts, but I heard some musings out on the local bloggers saying that there was a situation where the shooter was a student at the school and apparently was trying to buy some kind of electronic equipment from another kid in the school and giving them counterfeit money. Counterfeit Federal Reserve notes. Don't know if that's true or not. It was all alleged. But it was really funny, or not funny, ha-ha, but funny strange to me that I drove by the scene and I stopped counting at 35 different police cars of various departments. And that was just on the outer perimeter of the school. And I thought, how strange, that many police cars and the very poorly run local news on the radio was telling us that this was just an isolated incident of one shooter and one injured student. That's the story they're still sticking with. If we look over here at Wave 3 tonight, as it's about 4:15, I'm looking to see if they give us any new revelations about the school shooting. Only that the student was taken into custody after shooting another student. Never did tell us the color of the student, so you draw your own conclusions there. Now, really, really strange, the student, coincidentally, I guess, the student went running towards an apartment complex and was arrested by U.S. Marshals. At an apartment complex around 4 p.m. today. I still don't know why U.S. Marshals would be arresting this kid. I know somebody out there is going to tell me, oh, I don't understand law enforcement, and I just don't know, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. But we had 30, some police cars over there, and we're to believe it's just one student who shot one other student, just seemed a little excessive to me for an isolated incident. But I guess if it had been more than an isolated incident and they just sent a couple police cars, then the police department would probably have been sued. So a lot of what they were doing is probably to avoid potential lawsuits. So they captured this suspect, and as I was saying, ironically, coincidentally, however you want to say it, he was over in an apartment complex just northwest of the school in the Fern Creek Park, the same place where they had taken the students, escorting the students, evacuating them from the school. They took them to the park. Now, after his arrest, the teenager was taken to the LMPD 7th Division headquarters on Outer Loop, just down the road from us, and then he would be put in a juvenile detention facility. So I guess the good news, as far as we're told, allegedly, is only one student was shot, and it was non-life-threatening, so we're glad to hear that. And the arrest came very quick, just 3 hours after the shooting, so we have to give credit there. Give credit where it's due. I still think it was a lot of personnel, and I saw the pictures, and of course, here we go. We had the pictures of them wearing the full military fatigues. Does it really take 35 police cars, plus the helicopters, plus the SWAT team, plus the U.S. Marshals, plus everybody in their G.I. Joe fatigues and semi-automatic weapons, does it really take all that to get a 15 or 16-year-old kid who shot somebody and ran a couple blocks away? Just really strange to me. What also bothered me is they have these kids coming out of the school and they all get their hands over their head. Like they're automatic prisoners / hostages / victims. And that really bothers me. I have a problem with them having all the students with their hands over their head like they're all prisoners. I thought that was too much, actually. I think you just have them keep their hands out of their pockets. Wouldn't that have been enough? I would think it would be. I don't know. I don't know much. I'm not a police officer. I'll be told I don't understand how these things work. And I know some people will disagree with me. A lot of people in this office, though, will understand that police work has gotten way too militarized. How funny is it? Funny, ironic, not funny, ha-ha, that our police are now like military in the streets, which goes against posse comitatus, of course. And their military are like police around the world. Don't they have those roles reversed a little bit there? Why did our military become police and our police become military? That seems to be what's happened here. And I realize there are still some good rank and file police work going on out there, but their leadership has huge problems. Any police leadership who thinks that they need all these quotas and thinks they need all this military insignia and having kids march out with their heads on their heads like prisoners, they got problems. They got serious problems. So the TV news crews were out there. The helicopters were all flying over the neighborhood today, going back and forth, telling us about everything that's going on in the news. And then lo and behold, the Jefferson County school superintendent shows up. I'm trying to remember what this lady makes. I used to have this. Maybe I can look it up quickly and find out. But there she was. She showed up down by the student's hospital, wherever the student was taken to the university hospital. And she said she was there because they're all like one big family. But she herself had to admit there's 101,000 students in the county public school system, the government indoctrination camps, as we call them. So she couldn't really know this child. One dumb reporter even asked her if she knew him, and she said, no, we have 101,000 students. I don't know the student. Here it is, Jefferson County Superintendent. Let me pull this up here. See if they give me a list. I've got an Excel document here. We're going to look up the Jefferson County Public Schools Superintendent really quickly here. We know it's over $170,000 a year. I'm just trying to find out exactly what it is. The Excel document, if it'll open up here, good old Microsoft Excel. Thank you, Bill Gates. Here you go, Jefferson County Superintendent. We'll tell you exactly what she's making now. Oh, I'm sorry. I gave her a big pay deduction there. 12 years ago, the Jefferson County Superintendent would have made $175,000. She's making about $275,000 now. Can you imagine? The superintendent of the Jefferson County Public Schools is making over $277,000. And it kind of reminds me when I was at the Take Back Kentucky meeting about a week and a half ago, and our good friend James Comer was there, who, of course, is the agriculture commissioner. He's cleaned up the agriculture commission department since little Richie Farmer ran it to hell and back. And Jamie Comer was talking about how we do not need all these big bureaucrats making all this money off the public schools. Can't disagree at all with what he said. He said the top paid person in the entire county should be the superintendent, but then it should be the principals and the teachers. It shouldn't be all these bureaucrats in the front office. I can't disagree. I think he's 100% correct. I think there's a reason that we're not very deceptive here about who we're about, and we're always about the truth here. And that's why it's called the TNT Radio Show, and we are big fans of Jamie Comer. It's that simple. We don't try to hide it. This is not unbiased journalism, because we know whenever you hear about journalism, there's people who lie to you and tell you they don't have an agenda, but they really do. And then there's those of us who tell you that we have an agenda. But we want to get the truth out about stuff that people won't tell you about. But we're not going to sit there and tell you we're not biased. But Jamie Comer did speak to us at the Take Back Kentucky meeting about a week and a half ago. And he was very, very clear when he talked about how we need to have these bureaucrats not be paid so much, either cut their pay or get rid of them. Now, if you try to go and speak at the Jefferson County Public Schools Board meeting, we know how much trouble that can be. Because they'll claim that they encourage parents and members of the community to share your opinions and ideals at their meetings. But then if you look at their rules about speaking to a meeting, you will be given less than 3 minutes to address the board. If that isn't enough time, then you need to write a letter to the board or call your board representative at, and they give you the phone number. Then they say avoid repeating similar views of other speakers. In the interest of time, it's best to designate a single spokesperson to represent a group. You can show your numbers by asking those present to stand for, or simply by telling the board how many belong to your organization. So asking you now to identify yourself as an organization, they don't want you in there with individual rights, telling them what you believe should be going on with your county schools, because God knows you have the county sheriff's office collecting over $550 million of your damn tax dollars in Jefferson County, but you can only speak for 3 minutes. Jefferson County Sheriff's Office's website even tells you that they collect approximately $550 million a year for the 300,000 of us, the 300,000 suckers over these 25 different taxing jurisdictions. So let's think about this for a minute. Let's do the math. We're going to do some math here tonight on the show. I know that's bad, right? $550 million. I did the numbers here. I got the zeros in there. And you divide that up by 300,000 taxpayers. Wow, an average of $1,833 a year. And they're saying you get 3 minutes to speak. How do you like that? Your tax dollars are taken by coercion at the threat of a gun, and we think I'm exaggerating or being extreme, try not paying the taxes and see how they take them from you. And on average, you're paying each of you $1,833 a year. And they're saying you got 3 minutes to speak. And you better not speak about what somebody else is speaking about. It'll be like the old gong show. They'll gong you right off the stage. And we just saw this month that the teachers got another raise. In addition to step increases, which are already in the union contract. Surprise, surprise. Step increases are raises that teachers receive for showing up and are getting their super quickie graduate degrees that they root out of boxes of Cracker Jacks. And these raises are not performance-based because the teachers union forbids things from being performance-based. This is your public school system, folks. And then the superintendent got there talking about how they're a big family. I don't have anybody in my family coming and taking $1,800 a year from me and telling me I better just give them the money and shut up. And if I want to speak about where my money's going, I'll be given 3 minutes. I don't have any family members that do that. It doesn't sound like a family to me. And I'm sure it could have been a misspeak, but then the superintendent tells us that all the parents are with their students. No, those are their children, the superintendent. Those aren't their students. They're your teacher's students. They're those parents' children. Let's get it right. So, yeah, I'm on a bit of a rant that started out talking about the school shooting. But it just pisses me off when we think about what control we have in the school system and how they got this perfect working relationship with the city and county. It's all merged now. Police officers, they'll tell you how they all work together in a shiny, happy moment. They're all holding hands and singing Kumbaya. But these are the schools. These are the schools where most of these kids have to attend because they don't have the money to go to the private schools. And this is why you have a candidate like James Comer for governor who definitely, definitely wants school choice. And I'm not saying there's other candidates who don't. There's another Republican candidate who probably also will speak for school choice, but James Comer was the one who stood there and told us that the top paid people should be the superintendents and the principals and the teachers and not all these bureaucrats. So we talked a little bit about the school shooting that happened just a few miles from here and the pathetic existence that is the school system. I want to take you back to after the bottom of the hour break. We're going to go back to a school shooting from about 2 years ago. If anybody remembers Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newton or Newtown, Connecticut, we're going to go revisit that and see what the government's official documents say about that event today. You're listening to the TNT Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, we're back right here on the TNT Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network. We thank you for sticking with us. You're listening to the TNT Radio Show. Again, anytime you want to give us a call, sometimes we do take calls on the air, and if you do call us and we see that you are in the queue listening and you want to talk, just press the number one key, and you'll get us on the air, and you'll get live to opine about what you think. And if you're not on the line yet and you'd like to call in, again, 858-683-1326. Now, before the break, I was teasing, and we're going to talk a little bit about the old Sandy Hook story. And people say, why in the world are you going to bring up Sandy Hook, a horrible school shooting, a bloody, nasty school shooting, allegedly, that happened over 2 years ago? Well, I'm going to bring it up, and I'm going to say allegedly, because of the reports that just came out from the U.S. government. Again, I put this stuff out on social networks. Nobody wants to say anything about it. It's like they're afraid to look at it. They're afraid to talk about it. You would think what I'm putting out there was poison. You would think I'm putting out the Ebola virus that I've been warning people about. You think I'm putting out stuff that's going to be toxic. I can't talk tonight. But the fact is this. I put out the story from what the United States Department of Justice had to say about Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut. Just as no one wanted to talk about the U.S. government purchasing those hundreds of thousands of Ebola hazmat suits, so it's like nobody wanted to talk about ISIS driving Texas-built Toyota trucks. Also, nobody wants to talk about the U.S. DOJ document that just came out about Sandy Hook. And if you haven't heard this, it's very bizarre, it's very disturbing, it's very troubling. But the FBI's own reports are now saying 2 years later, how long ago was this? We're looking at almost 2 years, December of 2012, that zero murders occurred at Sandy Hook in Newtown. The FBI is now saying that nobody was killed at Sandy Hook. These are FBI crime statistics. If you don't believe me, go look them up at FBI.gov. But the recent FBI crime statistics, curiously, shockingly, surprisingly, whatever adjective you want to insert here, show that no murders occurred in Newtown, Connecticut in 2012. We talked about the story at the time. We talked about how people were on the scene known to be paid actors. We talked about how the Newtown Massacre became a mind control television event. But what about the fact that now the United States Department of Justice and the FBI are saying that there were no murders in Newtown, Connecticut 2012. I mean, we remember the corporate media reported the deaths of 20 children and 6 staff members at the hands of a deranged 20-year-old. But the internet sleuths took to the internet and took to the interwebs to stitch together clues that the shooting could have been a carefully scripted false flag event. Now, 2 years later, and scores of politicians and gun control groups acting like it's a good thing to take away your guns. They all cite Sandy Hook as the pretext to curtailing your Second Amendment rights. An investigation took an odd turn earlier this year. When National School Safety Consultant Wolfgang Halbig was visited and threatened at his home. Who threatened him? Homicide detectives threatened the school safety consultant Wolfgang Halbig. They threatened him after he began reporting on these inconsistencies in the narrative, which he believed proved to show that there was some kind of conspiracy, setup, fabrication. Among many questions that Halbig says are key to unlocking the Sandy Hook mystery, he says, why and for what reason would the FBI classify the shooting when they did not classify the Columbine shooting? He also questioned why no trauma helicopters were ever sent to the school and why paramedics and EMTs were not even allowed to enter the building to try to save lives. And like we said, now, in contrast to the Connecticut report, the 2012 FBI crime report, shows that 0 people were murdered in Newtown, Connecticut in 2012. Now, you could say, well, they're just not going to report it because it's a school shooting, which makes absolutely no sense. It would be apeshit crazy because, by comparison, Colorado, when we had the Aurora shooting, they did report the 29 murders in their DOJ numbers. They did take into account the number of people who died in the Century Theater during the premiere of the Dark Knight Rises film. But in Sandy Hook, they're reporting 0 people in the entire city were murdered in 2012. And while those who question the official story have largely been marginalized, the FBI's own data is now substantiating their theories. What do you think about the FBI's latest crime data saying that nobody died at Sandy Hook? Nobody died in Newtown, Connecticut in 2012. That's why I said it's bizarre and disturbing. So I told you we were going to be all over the map. Just to recap, we know we started out tonight talking about the school shooting here that happened in Louisville today. We talked a little bit more about the school system and your tax dollars. And we talk about Sandy Hook school shooting, where they tell us that nobody was killed now all of a sudden, according to the DOJ numbers. A little weird to me. We think a lot of people died there. They don't want to talk about it. They want to say nobody died there now. I will tell you another story, a sad segue here, but somebody that we did lose this week. And this is somebody that I would have considered a friend of the show if we had been personal friends with him. And that was former Congressman James Traficant died this week. Congressman James Traficant seemed to have some sort of tractor accident on his farm and went to the hospital very ill, very bad health situation, and then he actually passed away this past week. Now, a lot of people loved old James Jimbo Traficant, as they called him. He was best known for his beam me up signature quotes on the floor of the house. He died, like I said, Saturday night, only days after a critical tractor accident on his family's Ohio farm. He was a vocal critic of foreign aid. He was a vocal critic of the IRS. He spent 7 years in prison after being set up for federal corruption. Way back 7 or 8 years ago, he was talking about our slow descent into financial serfdom. He was one of the very, very, very few people elected to Congress to tell the truth about the lobbyists out there who control the purse strings and the puppet strings and dictate policy and control votes within Congress. He was an American treasure, in my opinion, and we definitely mourn his loss. God bless his family. If you never studied up on James Traficant, if you never studied up on what he was all about, he served 17 years in the House of Representatives and unfortunately 7 years in a cage at federal pen. They called him paranoid. They picked on his worldview. Way, way, way back in the early 1980s when he was sheriff of Mahoning County, Ohio, he actually spent time in jail. Why did he spend time in jail? Because he refused to foreclose on people's houses. He told the truth about the banks. Even though he was an elected Democrat, he crusaded against the banksters, the IRS, the aforementioned Department of Justice, the regulatory state. Apparently his constituents weren't too crazy about the feds either, or he wouldn't have been in office for 17 years. It was the sort of Rust Belt populism, which also had a strong dose of economic nationalism. That's not totally unusual in his part of the country, up there in northern northeastern Ohio. They don't normally have their own voice in Congress. These people usually don't have somebody looking out for them, but they did in James Traficant. James Traficant, on occasion, would threaten to reveal secret stories about Attorney General at the time, Janet Reno, and her call girls. He was one of the very few congressmen to actually criticize Janet Reno's actions in Waco, Texas, in the immediate aftermath of the assault that killed dozens of Branch Davidians in 1993, well before it was accepted that the government had screwed up. Yes, Traficant wore a ridiculous toupee. He made Star Trek references on the House floor, and sometimes he made some accusations that even he couldn't back up. So people would mock him. People would call him eccentric and weird. He fought his whole life against the political machine and ended up dying beneath the weight of a farm machine. Not meant to be funny. Although the congressman might actually have gotten a chuckle out of it. The computer is crashing now as we have a few minutes left on the show. And about the same time that we started having computer problems last week during the show. Don't really know why. Had no problems with the computer all week. We're just saying. So since we're going to go without any notes here, since our computer screen's gone, I will just tell you James Traficant was kind of a hero to us. Yes, he went to prison, but yes, many people thought he was set up. And he railed against the banksters, and he railed against the IRS, the Department of Justice, and other federal jackbooted thugs. We hope you can still hear us on the airwaves here, even though our computer has disappeared here. We hope the show is still rolling. Got a few minutes left. Got a few other things we want to cover. When it comes to people in the news, maybe we should cover somebody who hasn't been able to get in the news lately because, much like Traficant, he's not a neocon Republican. Much like Traficant, this other guy I want to talk about tonight, he's also not a Democrat, though. Traficant, people didn't think was a Democrat because he didn't act like one. But the guy I wanted to bring up tonight is the guy that has been trying to get in the debates, and that is one David Patterson, who's running for, you guessed it, United States Senate. Now, if you're going to run for United States Senate in Kentucky, apparently you're supposed to do it under one of the two major parties and get millions of dollars in funding, because if you don't, hell, they don't cover you in the media. And we already know the media will tell you, well, this candidate, we can't cover them because they're not getting any traction. No one's talking about them, so we can't talk about them, which is ludicrous. I've explained the pattern before. The banksters and the puppet masters bring in the money through the special interest. The special interest then feed the money to people like Mitch McConnell and Alison Lundgren Grimes. And people like McConnell and Grimes, who are running for U.S. Senate, whose commercials you are sickened by at this point, then feed the money back, you guessed it, into the media. Then the media say, we can't cover this other candidate because they're not popular. Nobody knows about them. But yet people will say they don't know about them because the media won't cover them. So it's a damned catch-22. Damned if you do and damned if you don't. They won't talk about them because they're popular. I'm sorry, they won't talk about them because they're not popular. And then they'll say, well, see, they're not popular. Well, how the hell are you going to know? How the hell are you going to know if you don't give them some airtime? And the latest culprit in not wanting to give airtime is, you guessed it, KET, good old Kentucky Educational Television. Why will Kentucky Educational Television not cover David Patterson? Well, as our good friend Ken Mulman, who does the Sunday night show here, Liberty Unbridled, will tell you, they keep changing the rules. They keep changing and changing the rules about what you can and you can't do to be a candidate to get coverage on KET. It's ludicrous. Again, we talk about your tax dollars. You're funding KET. Well, we found out just yesterday evening that David Patterson, candidate for U.S. Senate, is suing KET in order to get on the airwaves. He is suing in order to be allowed to participate in what is supposed to be a public Senate debate with the other candidates on the ballot, Grimes and McConnell. But you got this liberal progressive television network, KET, that's publicly funded, and they talk about fairness and discrimination as doctrine. But they won't allow David Patterson equal treatment to appear at the debate. Sounds very discriminatory to me. So he's suing KET to try to get into the debates. I really wish people would listen to him. I really wish people would have the opportunity to hear something either not Chevy or Ford. What if you want to buy an Infiniti? That's not Coke or Pepsi. What if you want to drink an RC? Something that's not red or blue. What if you like purple? What if you like green? But that's what we're told. You have all these other options anywhere else in society, and nobody is going to make you choose between those other two options. But all we hear over and over through these campaign ads, these advertisements, is that, oh, well, you got to vote for candidate X, so candidate Y doesn't get in. Oh, you got to vote for candidate Y, so candidate Z doesn't get in. Because all it is they're telling you you're going to have to vote for one of these shit sandwiches. So which shit sandwich are you going to vote for? Are you going to vote for shit sandwich number one? Or are you going to vote for shit sandwich number two? Because your tax dollars are only funding these two shit sandwiches. So nobody else is going to be allowed in there. So that's why a candidate on the ballot, officially candidate with the Libertarian Party, is having to sue KET. The same Libertarian candidate who got the unanimous endorsement of Take Back Kentucky a week and a half ago. The same Take Back Kentucky group that I told you had Jamie Comer come and speak, also had David Patterson speaking. So I think some of you all, you've heard us talk about Take Back Kentucky on the airwaves. Let me read to you for a moment the issues of concern to Take Back Kentucky, because they unanimously endorsed David Patterson for U.S. Senate. Take Back Kentucky says their mission is to preserve your God-given rights, recognizing the Constitution of both the Commonwealth of Kentucky and the United States, and that they believe in the principle of dual sovereignty and the preservation of Kentucky sovereignty. And they believe in industrial hemp, and they believe in getting rid of things like Agenda 21 and Real ID and biometrics. And they believe that Kentucky's government, in order to act responsibly to its duties, must have the citizens exercising civic duties and responsibilities. And they're committed to education on the issues. This is the group, again, this is the group that has unanimously endorsed David Patterson for U.S. Senate. Now, I realize there's a lot of neocons out there who piss in their depends when they hear me talk about this. Please be clear. I know that logic and math can be hard for you. But I'm not telling you that I'm endorsing this person. I'm telling you that the group Take Back Kentucky endorsed them. And some people get pissed off at that and say, oh, stop saying it was unanimous. Folks, if you were there and you voted for it and it passed without anybody voting against it, then that's what's called unanimous. I realize math and logic are hard for some people. But like I said, he's having to sue KET to get into the debates, even though he is one of only three candidates on the ballot. And he also has not been able to be heard by the Louisville Tea Party. Now, that's another point of contention, and I've talked to people with the Louisville Tea Party about this. And what they're telling me is, oh, well, David Patterson didn't come and speak to us about wanting to be in front of our meeting until it was too late. We have this big agenda already planned, and we couldn't have him speak, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's great, but he's been a known candidate for approximately a year. And he's one of only three candidates on the ballot. And I'm sorry, there's a lot of people out there who have told us they're sick of Addison, Mitchell, Jerome, McConnell, Jr. And they've told us that they're sick of having to choose between shit sandwich number one and shit sandwich number two. And they're sick of you saying, oh, vote for Patterson to vote for Grimes. And then on the Democrat side, they'll say, oh, vote for Patterson to vote for McConnell. So please tell us who in the hell someone would have to vote for to actually vote for David Patterson. We're sick of the bullshit and the foolishness. But like I said, just keeping it real for you folks, as the kids say, we're just bringing you the truth as we always do. A candidate on the ballot who gathered thousands of signatures to get on the ballot against two other candidates who only had to get two signatures. He's one of the three candidates on the ballot. He was unanimously endorsed by Take Back Kentucky. I will keep saying it, no matter how much it pisses people off, because math and logic are hard for some people. And he's having to sue KET to get into the debates. And he hasn't been allowed to speak in front of the Louisville Tea Party. So as we come to the conclusion of the show here, we really hope that the Louisville Tea Party will get their act together and make sure that people don't think that they're just an auxiliary of the Republican Party. Because it's one thing to say it, but put up or shut up, folks. You got an election 5 weeks from today. You got to find out about these candidates, and we're going to try to do that in the few weeks that we have left. We will talk about state reps candidates, and we'll talk about House candidates and Senate candidates and congressional and judicial and local and municipal races. We will try to get to as many of those as we can in the few weeks we have left before the elections. Because if we don't tell you, and your ignorance is bliss, and you sit home on your ass, and you don't get out and vote, folks, I don't have a problem with low voter turnout. I've told you people this. I have no problem with low voter turnout. What I have a problem with is dumbass voter turnout. So we want the people to be informed about the candidates, get your head out of your ass, and find out what's going on if you want to stand up to the New World Order.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.